Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I am going to step back from running the meeting tonight. I'm going to be out of town for the general meeting on Monday. So Vice Mayor Van der Zanden is going to run this work session and the general meeting next week. So I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to him and we'll get started.
Okay, this is the work session for July 10th. Joe Clark, would you read the vision statement?
Thank you, Vice Mayor Van der Zanden. We envision a distinctive community that prospers while and by protecting its natural resources with a sustainable economy and infrastructure that assures public health and safety and promotes personal development and initiative, where all members take social responsibility and actively participate in decisions affecting growth, development, regulation, and enforcement, in which people can retain a closeness with and caring for each other individually. And that's all I've got here. Individually and collectively, while working together to accomplish community goals and preserve community traditions. Thank you. Sorry for the glitch.
Thank you, Joe. We have the minutes from the June 14th, 2021 meeting posted. If any council members have corrections or questions, email the clerk this week before our next meeting. And so we're just going into staff reports, starting with Phoebe for the monthly financials. If you had anything for us, Phoebe.
Thank you. I just wanted to speak really briefly. Our fiscal year closed on June 30th, and our bottom line numbers are looking really good for fiscal year 21. We had, when we originally developed the budget a year ago, we were incorporating a lot of prior year surplus funds to balance the budget. And it looks like we're not going to need to use those funds at all. We haven't transferred any the whole fiscal year, and it looks like we will not need to. If you go up one page, the bottom line right now is that number is going to change, that 18,000, that number will change as the fiscal year kind of finalizes. We still have $8,800 of expenses that I haven't been billed for, and we'll have some ambulance billing that will go out that will count as income for that year. And then we're still waiting on is any FEMA funds for our flood expenses last fiscal year. So this report will continue to change over the next few months as everything solidifies for last fiscal year, but we're in really good shape. It's looking great. And I'm starting to get the first tax returns in for the second quarter of this year, April, May, June. So those are due by August 2nd. So I'll have more information about how our summer season has been going at our next work session and general meeting. That's all I had for this part.
Thanks, Phoebe. Do any of the council members have questions? Okay, City Administrator's work session report. Tom, do you have?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Vice Mayor. I have a couple of items to talk about. Like to thank Mayor Cannamore and Council Members Van der Zanden and McLaughlin for the cleanup work they did at the park. We had a little bit of debris issue after our winter and spring, and those folks went in and cleaned the park up, took a lot of branches out of the forested areas, did some flower boxing and a nice cleanup of the park after our winter spring layover. Also like to thank the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints for getting the park ready for our Independence Day celebration. They did an awesome job and it still looks great today. So thanks so much to you folks out there that brought our park back to life after its winter rest. Beach improvements. I want to thank Ben for installing the doggy potty stations at the beach, and he clearly identified which garbage can to make those deposits. Unfortunately, we've had those who have been putting their household trash into the trash containers. So we're locking them up until we can install the cameras. Also, someone's been emptying their honey bucket in the restroom. Totally disgusting. Thanks, Ben, for all the fortitude in getting the garbage cans cleaned up and the restroom cleaned up. We also have an opportunity for some funding. The Lynn Canal Icy Strait Resource Advisory Committee, also known as the RAC, is providing grant opportunities. The grant opportunities are focusing, on forest restoration, enhancement of fish and wildlife habitat, other types of resource objectives. The idea would be apply for funding to do a culvert at Grandpa's Farm and Harry Hall Creek. It would improve fish passage and also provide some enhancements for the coho rearing streams. We would have to do a 20% match for a project. We're estimating that the project would be right around $250,000, but there may be some funds to cover that with the capital funding that's likely to come forward here soon. So I wanted to bring this forward and see if the council would be interested in submitting an application to RAC for this particular project. Is there any input by the council? Okay, well, if you have any thoughts, please shoot me an email. hi, Tanya.
Oh, sorry, it was Brittany. I just can't raise my hand. I am interested in moving ahead and putting in an application for this project. Thanks.
This is Tanya. I concur. I think it sounds like an excellent opportunity. I think it sounds like an excellent opportunity to take care of that culvert. So I support it too. Thanks.
Thank you, Tanya. Mike?
Sorry, I was a little late getting online here. This is a project that already has the design work done. So it's essentially a bid ready project, shovel ready, but ready to bid, and I'm willing to manage the project as I did the other bridge projects. It's very similar, but I am hopeful that we can qualify for some additional funds from the state so that the city doesn't actually have to match to do that 20 or 25% match. If we can, the match just has to be non-federal. So if we can get the state to cover it, that portion of it, then all we have to do is just manage the project, and which is sort of our part.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Thanks for volunteering for that. Joe?
I also think it's a worthy project. I think we should step back and reevaluate the numbers once we know more about the state funding. I think we should move forward with it. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Okay.
This is.
So I'll go ahead and. Sorry.
Oh, I guess somebody has to be the odd man out here. First, I didn't know what perching was until I looked it up, but it's the washout at the downstream end of the culvert. But I've been out there a couple of times to look at that, and that culvert is huge. And we just paid Ponch to stabilize the upstream end of it with a bunch of rock, but the only obstacle to the fish that I could see was about a 6-inch drop at the downstream end of the culvert, which from what I've seen, that's nothing for the fish. It's a fairly fast stream anyway, but I was questioning whether this is really worth the city putting in $50,000 or more to tear all that out and put in a bridge. And you still have to stabilize underneath the bridge so that that doesn't get washed away. But anyway, that was my take on it.
Thanks, Joe.
Tom, if I may, this is Taylor. Mike, did you have something to respond to that? Yes, that stream is primarily a stream for rearing coho, and the small coho can't jump up that perch to the edge of that perch culvert, the several inches up there. And so the value of the stream is really not for adult fish, but rather for the fry that move into that stream and rear in it. There's also an issue with the failing embankment there. Joe, I don't know if you noticed, but there's sort of a wooden cribbing wall on the downstream side that is pretty old and rotting. And that's a failure that's going to happen at some point. And one of the advantages of putting in the bridge there is we won't have to worry about a failure of the embankment. The stabilization we did was for a washout on the opposite side from that that cribbing wall, and was a relatively minor washout. It was actually unrelated to the general culvert issue. Finally, there that crossing is has a pretty big drop off, and there's no guardrail or anything. So I've always felt that it was a traffic hazard. To my knowledge, nobody's gone off it yet, but they did on some of the other bridge sites. We had some significant accidents. We've never had one on this one that I'm aware of. But if we put a bridge in there, it will deal with that safety problem as well. And the bridge should hold up for 80 or 100 years. So it'll be a nice correction for a long time. At this point, we're only asking to file a grant request for this. And if we qualify for the grant, then we can decide whether to go forward and whether we have enough money altogether from various sources to make it happen. We might be able to get some money from Fish and Wildlife too, if we need to supplement. So that's just some more.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, Tanya.
Yeah, one thing I'll just add is my understanding of the reason the culvert is 6 inches above is because the land here is rising like an inch a year and the river's cut down, but the culverts don't move. So that's just the inherent problem with culverts in this country. And so it's just going to get worse. So we will have to deal with this at some point, even if fish are able to use it at this point. Within, you know, that gap's just going to get bigger and bigger. So sooner we take care of it, the better. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, so I'll go ahead and put something together and then get that circulated. I'm thinking Mike will review that for me and help bolster some of the technical details. And then we'll get that out. It's due, I believe it's in August. So we have a little bit of time. Yeah, August 6th. So we'll be able to get something put together hopefully this week. And then I can have an update in my report next Monday. We have two new librarians. Big welcome to Jesse Soder, our new administrative library director, and Leanne Weichel, who is our new library services director. Welcome aboard to both of you. And also a big thanks to Bree Olson, who has been filling in while we were without a director, and also doing an outstanding job of training up our new directors. So thanks very much, Bree. GPAC has received permission from DOT to install some flux meters. These will provide data to assist in developing the plume stop program at the airport. It's part of the work necessary to determine whether plume stop is going to be a viable solution for the stopping of the PFAS spread. They're requesting $10,000 to purchase four of the monitoring wells. According to Kelly McLaughlin, GPAC said we could get by with two, but four would probably be better. We're looking to see if the council is interested in more information on this project. I believe Kelly's going to be online or is online. Would the council like to hear from GPAC on this subject? Yeah, John.
Thanks, Tom. I looked into the emails on this and looked into the flux meters and plume stop, and it all sounds very interesting. I was actually wondering, I didn't see anywhere who would be maintaining those flux meters and doing the readings from those.
So my understanding is that Aetna will be doing the readings and doing the reports. I could hand this off to Kelly and she can provide more of the technical side of this information, if you like.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that was just one. I was just curious about who was doing the work on that, and thanks for filling me in on that. But if Kelly has anything she'd like to add to the technical end of it, that'd be fine.
Kelly, are you with us tonight? Oh, hi, Sally.
Yeah. I don't see her on here on the list of participants. I thought she was going to be, but, and I don't really have any answers other than what Tom has. Sorry, I was expecting her to be here, so I didn't prepare anything.
Okay, I'll leave this item on the my report for next week, and then maybe Kelly would be available to answer any technical questions there. Okay, the last item I have has to do with a project that we've been working on for a few years, and that's the strategic plan. Councilmember McLaughlin inquired about the status of the work. Yeah, thanks, Sally. I talked to the mayor, and it's a project we need to pick back up. Looking at the timing, there's some question of whether we want to start in August, or because we have at least three seats coming open this election, if we wanted to wait until after the summer and we seat the new council members to start it back up. So I'm looking for some feedback from the council on if they would one like to start back working on the strategic plan, and when we would like to start working on the strategic plan. We could start as early as next month or as soon as the new council is seated. My suggestion would be to the very first meeting, just kind of do a recap of what we've done so far, a little bit of background on the strategic plan and the procedures we've been using to develop the plan. For those of you that remember, we were working on the economic development portion, just finished up most of that work at the last meeting we had. I think it was in February of 2020. So is there any thoughts there? Yes, Ellie.
Thanks very much, Tom, for bringing that up. I agree that, you know, we definitely need to move ahead on that. I think we're a little overdue. It's a rather impressive amount of work appears to have been done on it in 2019, and I'd hate for that to just sit and stagnate. But I also think that it makes more sense to wait until after the election in the fall, and we have a full council moving forward to start addressing this. But in the meantime, I would suggest that everybody familiarize yourself with what's been done so far and what needs to be done, and it's a great start.
Thanks, Sally. If you're looking for information, we have a lot of that information on the webpage under the strategic plan. You can contact Karen if you're having difficulty locating it, or you could just get a hold of me and I can forward you updates of what we've been doing over the development period. Don't hesitate to give me a call if you are looking for information on that as well. Also, you could give me an email if you like and let me know your thoughts about when or if you have any suggestions on the how part of it. Any input you have would be great, and I'll pass that all along. That's all I have for my report, unless there's any questions.
Thanks, Tom. Did you still plan to speak to the position descriptions too during your report?
Actually, I was going to do that when the item popped up. I could do it now if we would rather talk about it now.
Got it. Thanks. I won't rush you along then.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Tom. Actually, that is the next item. We'll move on to consent agenda. And the item is to approve Gustavus Volunteer Fire Department chief position description. If you could speak to that, Tom.
Yes, thank you. So when I posted this for the agenda, it was my understanding we were going to move forward with a fire chief position. Somehow I got my wires crossed, and what we are looking to do is advertise for a full-time fire chief and then also advertise for an interim fire chief. And that interim fire chief advertisement would be focused on our general local regional area, Puna, Gustavus, Juneau, Sitka, just focusing on folks that would be aware and familiar with Gustavus and what our needs and capabilities are. So because this is an existing position description, unless otherwise directed, we will post this tomorrow, get it out, and get it advertised, as well as the interim position, since it's a temporary position. We can go ahead and get that circulating. The idea is to run the full-time position through the summer and fall, see what kind of response we get. If we're finding that we're not getting any response, then bring this back to the council or the work group to try to determine what the next course of action would be. Just as a little background, council members Taylor, Vander Zanden, and McLaughlin had been working in figuring out how we wanted to proceed in replacing the fire chief. They did some discussions with the volunteers and looked over the existing position descriptions. And that was the recommendation that was coming forward. So if there are any questions, I'm sure we could get some responses by the working group. If not, we'll get these positions out tomorrow. Yeah, Tanya.
So just to clarify, there's a sort of a long-term position that might take take a while to fill. And in the interim, there's more short-term local position. Is that full-time as well?
Yeah, Joe, do you want to answer that?
Well, I wanted to give my understanding of what we were doing. When we talked about an interim position being advertised locally, I understood that we were only talking about Gustavus, because if we go regional, we're asking somebody who's interested to actually move here and set up shop, and then they might be replaced at any time. And that doesn't seem like a very good idea unless they could actually qualify for the permanent position. So I would prefer that we only advertise locally to see if there's someone who's interested in stepping up and doing whatever they can in the interim, and take it from there for a month or two.
Would it be a full-time position, Joe?
That position description that we had was a part-time 20 hours, but it was flexible, that it could go anywhere from 20 to 40. This is kind of a figure it out as you go thing. We haven't been here before.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, Mike.
Maybe I can elaborate on that, at least from my view on it. The permanent position will put out nationally on the fire listserv. That we did that 5 years ago when we were last time we were hiring, 5 and 6 years ago. And it can take a long time to get qualified, acceptable candidates to apply. And we thought that since that takes a while, and plus even if we hired them, they may have to move here if they're not in the local area. So it could take a while to get somebody actually on board. So the idea was to offer the position locally as an interim position. And the interim position description actually removes some of the qualifications that we have for the full-time permanent position to make it easier to fill. And it also takes out some of the duties that we don't anticipate that an interim person would have to do. And we'll leave those kinds of duties such as planning for the department and that sort of thing for the actual permanent hire. And we had in mind, we don't know whether an applicant locally would want to work half-time or full-time. So we wrote it flexibly so that the city could negotiate with an applicant and see how much time they wanted to put in. There's plenty of work to do as a full-time, but they may not be available for that long. So we'll see who we get and what their interest is and negotiate with them on how much time they would spend in the job. I hope that answers Tanya's
question. Yeah, thanks, Mike. Any other questions on this?
This is Brittany. I don't have any questions, but I just wanted to thank Joe and Mike and Sally for working on this. And I'm glad that we are at a place where we can start putting some stuff out there, and hopefully it'll take less time than last time. So thanks to the three of you.
Thanks.
Okay, if that's it for the okay. Well, we'll move on then to the next item is to confirm appointment of Library Administrative Director Jesse Soder and Library Services Director Leanne Weichel. Anyone have any comment on that? Okay, that will be on the consent agenda for next Monday's meeting. Next item is approved calculation of endowment fund grant amount for 2022 award cycle. Phoebe, I was wondering if you could explain that. It wasn't very clear to me when I read through it, but it could.
Sure, thank you. I'd be happy to. We do this every year after the fiscal year ends, and I might have been a little premature drafting this for this meeting because I'm still waiting for one of the numbers for the consumer price index to finalize. So if that doesn't come through by Wednesday, I'll bump this to the August meeting instead, so that we need to know by Wednesday to post it on the agenda. But basically the black text here is an excerpt from our policy and procedure for the Gustavus Endowment Fund grant program. And then the red text is the calculations for this year using the different formulas that are all outlined there to generate what the amount would be that would be available for the grant cycle that would occur this fall and then be awarded in December. So we do this every July or August. And so if I get the final consumer price index numbers in here, these numbers will change slightly for the general meeting packet. And then if I don't get them, I'll bump it to the August meeting when we have all our data that we need. As of right now, using the previous consumer price index values, we're looking at right around our normal endowment fund grant program amount, $44,673. But that number will change once I get the final data. I just wanted to have something for the council to be able to review in case I did get my final data before the general meeting packet. So it'll either be in the packet and on the agenda with slightly different numbers, or it'll get bumped to August.
Thanks, Phoebe. Any council members have questions? Okay, next item is Tidelines Institute request for a 12-month extension to their endowment fund grant. They're looking for an extension to use the money that they were granted last year. They got slowed down because of the fire and building prices. So anyone have questions or comments on that? Go ahead, Tanya.
Yeah, thanks. I just have a question maybe for Phoebe about the mechanics of this. Is this a hardship for as far as budgeting, or is this a pretty easy thing to do, Phoebe?
It's a piece of cake on my end. They're just, they're originally going to ask for 12 months. It's actually just through end of July. So it's a 7.5 month extension. And that money's just sitting in the grant checking account. So it's no hassle for me at all.
Great, thanks.
John, go ahead.
Thanks. My initial question was the same as Tanya's in terms of the mechanics of it. So it's good to hear that's simple. And I would like to support that given the setback they had with the fire, but also I think the trend is going to be down on the price of building materials coming up. So that'll help their grant to go a little bit further.
Phoebe, do you happen to know what the amount of that grant was?
Yes, it was $38,316.17. And we have done an extension, the council's granted an extension in the past before to the community center when there was issues getting gravel from the gravel pits one fall. So this has been done before.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Go ahead, Joe.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. I'm in favor of this extension. We've had some unusual mitigating circumstances, and I think it ought to be granted. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next item on the consent agenda is FY22 NCO AMLIP, FY22 R&R, which basically is taking money out of checking and putting it into the repair and replacement AMLIP account. Anyone have questions about that? correction, that's coming out of a checking account going into a AmLib savings account. Okay, no questions on that one. The next one is FY22 NCO AmLib road maintenance. Just the reverse of that one, we're taking money out of a savings account and putting it into the checking account to cover an amended balance in the road. Okay, no questions on that one either. New business, CY21-09, a resolution, acceptance of coronavirus local fiscal recovery funds. Tom, I wonder if you could explain that one a little.
Yes, thank you. So this is for us to receive funds from the American Rescue Plan Act. Those funds go through the state, and the state requires that we pass a resolution very similar to this one. We don't know exactly what our entitlement is because they require that this resolution be passed, a couple other documents be submitted before they'll use that information to determine the calculation for our entitlement. We have a range of estimates for how much we're going to get. They're very different numbers, so I won't bother to throw those out because there's not a lot of confidence in any of those numbers at this point. The numbers just keep changing based on communities that accept or refuse these funds. So once we get this resolution passed, we'll submit it to the state, and then in about 10 days, we'll receive the funds into our checking account. So that's what this resolution's for.
Okay, thank you. Anyone have questions for Tom on that? Okay, next item is approve short form scoping document for the Good River Bridge repairs based on a survey done by the state, I believe 2019. And this isn't necessarily have to do with the bridge itself. Most of the suggestions are with the guardrails on each end and replacing rock or whatever that's washed into the creek down below. And this is just, we're just talking about the $15,000 for the engineering that we need to get the permits to do this job, not the price of it. Anyone have questions on that? Go ahead, Mike.
Yes, the reason we're, if it was just the repairs to the bridge that are out itself that are outlined in the bridge report, it'd be easy. But the reason that we thought that we ought to get an engineer involved, a geotechnical engineer, would be to deal with that slope that's failing as that stream cuts deeper and deeper for the same reason that Tanya mentioned. The fan is rising and the stream cuts deeper, and it's right next to the bridge embankment there. And so that embankment is failing, and we're going to have to come up with a significant stabilization there, and it's probably something that should be designed. So to make sure we're doing the right thing. So that's the purpose of asking for some engineering help on this.
Thank you, Mike. Any other comments or questions about the bridge document? Okay, next item is to approve the short form scoping document to refurbish the old preschool post office building. I assume everybody's looked at this already. Anyone have comments or questions? Well, I'll go ahead. I have a couple of comments about the items listed here as far as fixing the old building. I agree that it does need to be fixed to some extent, the tree taken out, the rotten stuff removed. As far as the looking at an underground fuel tank, that's a lost cause. It's going to need an above ground one. If there is one, we would not dare take a chance on using it. Some of the items sound like they would be straightforward and easy to do, but if this has steel studs in it and we go to try and replace a broken window, we'll be opening up a huge can of worms trying to deal with that. And it would be better just to replace a couple of panes in a window than to try and deal with an entire window. The water problem is going to be the biggest. We don't know if there is a septic tank or a crib or what the water source ever was, but I just wanted to just say don't have too big of expectations of fixing this up into a cute little thing. It's going to take a lot more than $10,000 and a lot of rebuild to make it that, but we can make it usable, and it does need to be. Thanks. Any other comments or questions on that? I guess we could always talk with Tanya. I think she's kind of spearheading that with comments as well. So I don't know who else is with you on that, Tanya, but you can let us know.
Yeah, it's mostly really been Tom at this point, and Mike as well. So kind of a group effort. But I agree with you that it's potentially a can of worms, but we got to start somewhere. So I think we kind of just need to, this seems like a good start. And then we can kind of decide to what extent we're going to, you know, how much money to put into the place. But I think just to make it workable and not further deteriorating is like the first goal.
Yes, I agree. Thank you. Okay, next item is short form, approve the short form scoping document for the Marine Facilities Coordinator Building at Salmon River. That's a small building waiting to be purchased. And moved there right near the entrance to the DRC, and probably then construct wings on the side of it for outside storage. And I guess the power installation comes under the next scoping document. Basically, that's it, $8,000 for purchasing the building, moving it, and getting it set up with some additions. Yes, Ali.
Thanks, Joe. Do we have any idea, or have we looked into who might do this work? Have we put out any kind of a bid or anything at this point?
I can answer that, Vice Mayor. So we have a small building already constructed that would be suitable for this use. A local contractor has this building and is willing to sell it to us, move it on site for $4,000. We're also unsure what the exact cost would be to run the power from the siren over to the building, but we're estimating that within the $8,000, we could cover that cost. It shouldn't be a lot of other high dollar expenses. There will be some other expenses, you know, getting some concrete feet for the building so that we have it up off the ground, and some minor costs associated with that. Along with this scoping document is the CIP document where when we proposed that for the capital project, we estimated it at $10,000. But with this scoping document, we feel like we can get it in under that at the $8,000 amount. Did that answer all your questions, Councilmember McLaughlin?
Well, not, yeah, thank you for that. But my question really is, you know, in this town, it's really hard to find people to do any kind of construction work right now because everybody's so busy. So I just wondered if we have a timeline as soon as possible, who are we thinking is going to be doing that concrete work and, you know, the construction of the covered work areas and, you know, setting it all up.
So we're not going to lay a pad or anything. We just use some cinder block feet to place the building on. And Ben's going to do a lot of the work as far as modifying the existing building to fit his needs. In terms of the lean-to, that's probably something that will be done as time and resources are available. He has a concept on how he wants that work area to look. We recognize it's going to take a while to get everything up and running, but we hope to start doing that as soon as the scoping document is approved next week, assuming that it will be.
Okay, thanks, Tom.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, I think this is a fairly simple thing. It's just going to sit on pier blocks and adding wigs onto the side of it is certainly something that Ben can do with a little help. I'll probably help him with it. So I think it's going to go fairly well. That power installation that Tom mentioned, I think comes under our next item of a scoping document for the tsunami siren power installation. It's $4,100 was the price that they got from AT&T because they are putting a transformer, they're coming out of the power from the DRC and running about, I would guess 300 feet of wire over to the site for that new building and putting a transformer there. The diagram that you have in your packet shows the tower for the siren to be across the road over where trucks and boat trailers park. I think that's a mistake, and I think and Ben as well, we think that the tower should go right next to the building where it's out of the way. And we don't have to run any wire then. We can just come out of the transformer and put a meter on the wall there and run power to the siren and get it all done at once. So we might be able to get AT&T to drop their price a little on that as well. That's my comment on them.
If I may, Vice Mayor, if we're going to change the location, if you could get me the location as soon as you determine where we want to place it. I have to submit a request to DNR. This area, if it falls within the Cooperative Resource Management Agreement for the small boat harbor, we have to get permission from DNR. And they require that we give them information such as the size, type, location. I've already been in contact with DNR and was going to send out a letter tomorrow with that request. So if we're going to move the location, if you could let me know where we're thinking about putting it so I make sure I get the information to DNR and we don't have to change it. Thank you.
Go ahead, Phoebe.
Thank you. I think the siren location was developed, I believe, between Travis and the state who's funding the siren installation. And so before we're going to move it, I think we need to figure out why they thought that's where it needed to go, because I know there was some kind of at least informal analysis or discussion that chose the spot that it is based on the way it was going to be facing and trees and things like that. So we might need to check on that again too.
Tom, I think Ben is We've talked a fair amount about that. He could fill you in on everything I know about it. I don't know what the installation of that tower is going to be like, what kind of space it takes up, but he knows as much or more about it anyway, so we'll get back to it. Ben, is that you?
Yes, Joe. So the reason that Travis said that the siren needed to go in the middle of the boat harbor was because where the transformer and the building are going to go is next to some cottonwood trees. And they decided that it wouldn't broadcast out as loud in the direction of the cottonwood trees if it was next to the cottonwood trees. So they decided to put it next to a shorter spruce tree in the middle of the boat harbor. The spruce tree will be between Gustavus and the siren. So I don't think that they thought the whole thing out correctly, because putting it next to one tree that's going to grow up around it compared to putting it next to a tree that's already as big as it's going to get just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. I think Travis had already decided that he wanted it in the middle of the boat harbor, and that's what he went with. But we can confirm that with the state or not. You know, I think we're talking about an extra $1,000 to trench across the road and lay that wire rather than just putting it right next to the shed and the transformer. So that's what Joe and I talked about today.
Thanks, Ben. Does anyone else have comments or questions? Okay, last item, FY22 NCO. I don't know if we've covered the short form scoping document for the tsunami. That's that's the $4,100 that AP&T wants for running the wire over to the building and the transformer. So the rest of it is covered by government funds of some sort. So that's what we're voting on, is just to accept that expense. And then the last item is FY22 NCO ordinance for providing for the amendment of city held accounts. This is, I believe, the total of these capital projects: 10,000 for the post office, 15 for the Good River Bridge engineering, 8,000 for the marine facilities building, and doesn't look like the 4,100 is included there, but it's up on top. So the total comes to 37,000 and change. And that's what this NCO is about, unless Phoebe wants to correct me on that.
Nope, that's correct. And then none of these projects would be able to proceed until the public hearing funding them in August. So work would not begin in July. It would be after the public hearing August 9th when they were funded.
Okay, anyone else have questions or comments? Go ahead, Tanya.
Yeah, thanks. So I'm just trying to make sure I fully understand how this process works. The short form allows for the kind of like outlines the general idea of the project, and then the NCO, once it goes through public hearing and we vote on it and approve it, actually approves the project. And then if there's going to be someone, if we're going to hire someone to do some of these aspects, then it's, we put out a request for bid, or can, or some of this money might just be used for materials. I guess that's my question. What happens next after it's funded? Is it always a request for bids, or sometimes does it just get spent up in various ways, or can someone explain the process a little bit more?
Thanks, Tanya. That would be my question too. So either Phoebe or Tom, could you clarify that?
I'd be happy to speak to that. It kind of varies based on all of these. Each one of these is a little different. The first one, the tsunami siren power installation, would just simply be a purchase order. We already have the estimate from AP&T, but I can't issue a purchase order until it's been funded by the council. The old post office refurbish, I think is kind of a unique situation that will need to be a little more formalized and fleshed out before we start paying anybody for work in there. But you certainly could be buying supplies and things like that. For the engineering for the Good River Bridge, in the past we've done either a formal RFP process with regional engineering firms or an informal procurement process soliciting proposals from two or three at least engineers in the area. And so that would occur next to be able to use those funds. And then the building at the Seven River Boat Harbor, there's a potential building already identified. So that would simply be a purchase order, and then the rest of it's mostly materials and Ben's time. If any of them required an RFQ or an RFP, we could have that prepared and ready to be on the agenda August 9th also, so that it could be, if it was approved August 9th, then we could issue it August 10th. So those two things could happen at the same meeting if we do need to do a full RFQ or RFP for any of the projects. The scoping for a lot of these projects often occurs months ahead of time before they're funded, or even years or things like that, if we're including them in requests to the legislative capital budget. And it's just right now with these, since we just approved the capital improvement plan this spring, and now we're moving these forward, that they're on the same meeting. So it can occur different ways.
Thanks, Phoebe, that helps a lot. I just have one more question. When is a RFB or RFQ required? Like what would, I'm not sure if you can hear me. What would prompt needing a request for bids or RFQ?
It's written in code or the procurement policy, and Mike can speak to that. He's got his hand raised, but it's mostly if it's over a certain dollar amount or certain types of projects. Professional services like engineering don't always necessarily need to go out for RFP or RFQ, but you need to solicit bids from multiple different businesses to be able to compare. But otherwise, I think it's over, if it's over 10 grand, but I'd have to pull up the code to be sure, but Mike might know.
Yes, I can try to help. I wrote the original policy and procedure for purchases under 10,000. I don't remember all the details in it, but we generally use, I mean, there's a schedule in that policy and procedure for purchases at certain levels and what we have to do to get quotes. Like very small things, you don't have to get any quotes on. You get a little bit bigger and you're supposed to get three phone quotes or three written quotes. And then when you get up above 10,000, you usually do an RFQ to purchase either goods or services. If it's a very large project, like like the bridge jobs that we did use the more formal invitation to bid, ITB or IFB, invitation for bid, they use both terms. And it has a lot more detail in the contracting that allows you to consider the kinds of problems or how you would deal with a problem on a much larger project. So if you're over 100,000 or so, you usually go with an invitation for bid, unless it's something like our annual maintenance contract. We use request for proposal when we're asking for professional engineering services. And the reason for that is that when you're getting quotations or proposals from engineers, they're not all offering exactly the same thing. And you're not looking at just the bottom line price and making a decision on a set fixed price for the project. You're looking at what they're offering and what their proposal about how they will do it and what their qualifications are. So you don't necessarily choose the lowest, a low bid for a professional services contract. So that's called a request for proposal. So I hope that lays out this symbol for you.
Yes, that's very helpful. Thank you for just giving us a little class in how this works. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike and Phoebe. Anyone else have question or comments or anything else they want to bring up tonight in the work session? Okay, if no one else has anything, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great night.
Thank you.